Okay, so it's very close to Pesach. So usually, in the past, we've discussed some areas of halachas related to Pesach. I wanted to talk about two things. I wanted to dedicate a little bit of time to some of the halachas, and then a little bit of other, maybe some things we'll speak Shabbos HaGadol in the Kollel, or other things that I get to the time. So the halacha part, I don't know if I made a right assumption, assuming that if anyone's here, they're not making Pesach. I don't know if we should talk about for people that are going away or people that are staying, but you can tell me if there's any preference. What I thought to do was maybe just based on people's questions that I've been asking, I was going to talk about five questions. I'll discuss five questions, and if there's any more specific areas that we could discuss, we could do that. But I wanted to just bring up five areas that people seem to ask questions about. So just quickly, if you are not staying in your house and you are not renting at your house, so no one's going to be there. So some people right away, like, okay, I want to sell the whole house, I don't do anything, and whatever. I don't want to have a headache. So the emes is, it's not really such a big deal to really just do the bdika in your house, so at least to do the mitzvah bedikah, schametz before you leave, the night before you leave. Essentially what that means is that you could sell all the areas in the house that are like furniture, couches, cabinets, and everything like that. And it's really just the floor space of the house, which probably not leaving cookies and stuff on the floor anyway. So you just, who's ever sweeping the house, sweep it up, and go through the house, sweep it, or whatever it is, and then you do bedikah on the house that way. But everything else you could sell, but, some people come in and say, I'm just selling the whole house, and locking the door, I'm not doing anything. It's probably better just to do a little bit of a bedikah in the house, even if you're not going to be there, and it doesn't have to be a big deal. Like I said, basically any area in the house you can really just close off, and cabinets, couches, furniture, all that, and it will be just the areas, like the floor areas, pretty much. So that will be pretty simple. Okay, so here's five common questions. Question number one. Do I need to cover the shelves in the fridge or just clean? And what about my counters? So the answer to that question is that the Mishnah Berurah brings down a minhag to cover all surfaces that food goes on if the surface is not completely straight. So for example, this thing over here, there's no edge to it. There's no ledges, there's no cracks, there's no, so it's smooth. So an area like that, you're allowed to clean and you don't have to cover. But a fridge, a shelf in a fridge, a lot of times has cracks and crevices. It's like there's glass, and the glass is being held in by like the plastic and whatever it is. So you have to like really get in to all. So in those types of scenarios, the Mishnah Berurah brings down the minhag is to cover it, not just to clean. Counters are much bigger than an area like this. Counters oftentimes do have cracks and have where they're glued together. And they're not always just one flush piece. Number one. Number two is counters have to be cleaned very well in order to kasher. So, let's one thing at a time, the fridge. So, Memela, the fridge, I would recommend to cover the shelves because it's not just one flush piece of, it's not usually so straight, it's not so easy to clean. You would have to get into the cracks over there. So I would usually recommend, even if it's just used for cold, to cover the shelves in the fridge. As far as counter goes, so if the counter is a material that could be kashered, which is stone counters, so then technically you could kasher it by pouring boiling hot water on the counter. But there are three reasons why that's not so recommended. Number one is you have to clean the counter very, very well. It means to like the touch, that it shouldn't be like anything stuck to it. Sometimes you can't see on a counter, so you would have to make it perfectly clean. Number two is, it's hard to really pour water on every spot. You could do it, but it's hard to do that. And number three, there is a chumra to maybe use like an Evan Meluban, like an iron, or some sort of other system besides just pouring boiling hot water. And the chumra, there is an inyan to avoid that. So therefore, it could be the minig of covering would apply to encounters as well. If you can kasher, you can kasher. I'm not saying you can't, but definitely you can. Covering it is there's I wouldn't say just a chumrah. There's a good reason to cover it. If you are covering it, you don't have to kasher it, especially if you're covering it with like a material that won't rip. If you're covering it with a very thin material that's going to rip, maybe then there is an inyan to do that as well. Okay. That was question number one. Question number two. Okay, I have plastic in my dishwasher. Can I kasher it? We don't kasher plastic for Pesach. Anything which is plastic in it, we don't kasher it for Pesach. So dishwashers, I would not recommend to kasher for Pesach because they have plastic all over the place. And we shouldn't kasher it for Pesach. During the year is a different story, but not for Pesach. Therefore, the next question is, what do I do with my faucet on my sink? Because the bottom of the faucet is the same problem. The faucet itself, besides the sink, which I'm not including in one of the five questions, I don't have enough insurance to take on everyone's sinks. So, but the faucets underneath, the part on the faucet, the spigot that comes out underneath, is usually made out of plastic. So it would be the same thing. We don't kasher plastic for Pesach. So that would mean that you should really replace that little piece. And sometimes it's not just a little piece. Sometimes it's the whole handle, you know, on top of the faucet comes out to be a sprayer. That entire thing is plastic. So if we don't kasher plastic for Pesach, I would figure out a way to replace that. I'm not sure it's so simple, but I think it could be done. another question, can I use my water dispenser? So I have a water dispenser, a standalone thing, or if it's in my fridge, or if it's in, but sometimes, a lot of people have like a standalone water dispenser. Can I use the same one for Pesach and for during the year? So if it's used for hot water, then you cannot use it for Pesach also, because it was used for chametz, and the spout is plastic. Same thing. Since it's plastic, we can't kasher it, so you can't use it for Pesach. And if you can't use it for Pesach for the hot, you can't use it for the cold either. Because the minhagid, the halacha is, if there's something that was not kasher for Pesach, you can't use it for cold on Pesach either. If it's only used for cold, like let's say in a refrigerator, so you have the water dispenser in the refrigerator, so that you could use for Pesach, you just have to clean it, you don't have to kasher it. Okay, and then...
Can I ask on that?
Yeah.
Is it better not to, or the chafila is fine to use from the fridge?
If it's clean, unless you're concerned that it got really, but if it's clean, like anything else, you could use it.
Just also comment on the faucet. They're like $15 on Amazon, the actual faucet itself. You could just screw it in, and it comes with like 11 adapters, so usually most of them that pull down. My only question is, like that tiny little ball that's attached to the hose, it's usually stuck inside the faucet. You don't have to worry about that.
Right? If it's inside, it's not exposed?
It's not. I'm saying when you take down the hose to whatever, it is exposed.
What, the whole hose?
The hose, and there's like a little bolt in the hose that's usually stuck inside of the faucet itself. So,
what about the hose itself?
What?
I mean, but you're spraying. What are you spraying? You're spraying. When you spray, you're not spraying hot water usually.
It's never yachts water,
though. The hot water is usually not when it's being sprayed. I guess I have to see what you're talking about, but it doesn't sound like it would be a problem. Okay. Is there any questions on this so far? Other questions? Some of these points? Okay. Okay, a fifth question. If I don't sell chametz gomer, so can I sell? What can I sell? What can't I sell? So, chametz gomer items that, if you're makban on that, so let's say instant oatmeal or instant oats, rolled oats, these things went through a process and not just raw. They usually went through a process, they're considered chametz. Soy sauce is considered chametz. Whiskey is machlekes. Most people, their minhag is to keep whiskey, even if those that don't sell chametz gomer keep whiskey. And pearled barley, also some say it was like soaked, depends on the company, so that's a shayla. But yeast or mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise, unbleached flour, and perfumes, anything with alcohol, is all not common. It's going around, those things can be sold. I'm not talking about, obviously, pasta, cereals, all that's obvious, it's gomer. But other things like this, flour and yeast is common questions, is not considered chametz gomer. So these, I think, are five questions that people seem to have a lot of these questions. So just wanted to cover that. It's very close to Pesach, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now, but if there's any other questions, we can go through anything specific.
All those things that are not chametz gomer, do they have to be sold if they're not really chametz?
You have to put them away because they should be put away like the dishes. Like non-Pesach dishes have to be put away. The halacha is they can't be in a cabinet that there's a concern you may open on Pesach. So therefore, all cabinets that are being sold should be marked. And huadin, you can't keep in the same pantry non-chametz stuff with chametz stuff because it's the same thing as dishes. You may use the non-chametz, the non-Pesachtic ingredients. So they have to be put away with the chametz. This sold, I don't know. It's probably better to sell it.
What about if it's a refrigerated item? Could it be like in a separate section of the fridge?
Which should be covered over.
Covered over label.
Wait. Yeah.
Related to the water dispenser, in my fridge there is, you can get ice out of the water dispenser, and the ice container, and actually you can access it from inside of the fridge. Like someone could put their hand inside of it. Can that be
used? Wash it out. Yeah, wash it out. If you're concerned, you can empty out all the ice and rinse it out.
So I have a question. I did kosher my countertops for the first time. Now I'm getting car palpitations, but whatever. So the question is, the backsplash, I did, for the most part, try to splash some water up on the backsplash, but the truth is, I never really put anything hot against the backsplash, so...
Lamaisa, things do go up against it. You may not realize, but let's say hot pots may be pushed up against it when they're off the fire, and a hot pot off the fire is still a cleavishin, and it goes up against the back of the thing, or you have a crock pot up against there, or you have a hot water urn up against there. So crock pot, the backsplash should be addressed somehow. So you could kosher it. They have machines now that in the old days they had sprayers which would gave steam. For Moshe has a tshuva, you don't kosher with steam. You can't kosher with steam. But nowadays the steamers they have actually put out water, hot water, boiling hot water, and it only steams up after it hits the surface. It means it's like actually shooting water and then it steams up after, so it retains its heat afterwards, supposedly. Basically, there's new types of steamers that you could use for kashering. And those things, obviously, would be much neater and all that. You don't have to go, like my kids say, you know, your version of kashering is first you flood the whole kitchen and then you burn it down. So, yeah. But the may not have to do that if you with that thing. I haven't seen one, but they say that it's there.
I guess the other thing is like you were saying about going over with your hand, like the very, very corner there was like an extra like little bit of caulking. Do I have to like think about that? If, like,
caulking is not comments, it's fine.
What?
No, I'm not talking about that. Just in the food that's stuck to it. Yeah. Right. Okay. I didn't talk about ovens or stoves or anything. I'm not gonna get it unless someone has a question. I don't mind getting into it, but
I have one more question. Yeah. I don't have a lot of questions.
About covering the oven door. So I know that Rav Benzinger Zatzal used to say that you should cover your oven door because it can't get hot enough from the self-cleaning. Nowadays, though, I've seen in like the bottom of my oven now, it says, do not put foil, like literally. But I think that's on the floor of the oven. I think it's safe to put on the door, right?
Like I said, I should make everyone sign a waiver before the shir that I'm not chai for any. But I don't know that it makes a problem to cover the oven door.
Okay, but it's better to cover the oven door.
Achayra.
Okay, and also,
there's another reason also because it's glass, and glass we don't kasher for Pesach really.
Okay, so if it goes over the whole entire glass area and like till the border, and then that's just where the oven is like closed. Meaning, it's you put it over, but like there's always a little area where the hinges, what I'm saying? It's like the door closed.
Yeah, but that's not exposed to the food.
Okay, fine.
That's the part that when you close the door, that part's not out with the food. Okay. I don't know what to do with this, but if you want to know a good chumrah, so I was in Rabbi Salmar's house one time. So he was taking out the light bulb inside the fridge because he said it's glass. It's inside the oven. I mean, it's glass and you can't kosher glass. So you're taking out the light bulb before Pesach. And I never saw anyone else do that, but you could look into that if you want.
Just one disclaimer about stoves.
But it's in
where
things are clean.
Right.
Well,
it's in where
things are clean. Right. So it could be it gets self cleaned also. okay. Right, one thing is if you are covering, we're talking about backsplashes, the back of the oven is the same. I don't know, not everyone's stoves are the same, but if you have that type of stove that it's like a range that has like the instruction, whatever it's called,
control panel
on the back, so you sometimes. Pots definitely go back all the way there, so that should be covered. But if you're covering that area, be careful not to cover the vents, because that's where all the heat vents out, and you could trap all the heat and then not have an oven for Yontif. So make sure you don't do that. Okay. Is any other areas that we should get into? Yeah. Okay. So just in terms of the Yom Tov, Pesach's coming, Zman Chir Seinu, and I'm sure what's on everyone's minds is can we take out any sort of meaning of the Yom Tov in, you know, considering the times that we're in. What's going on in Eretz Yisrael and in the world, and it's very unsettling. So, what type of avodah? What's the chizuk that for us from the Yom Tov? Everyone has their avodah when it comes to the Yom Tov, and it's very, you know, leading up to it is very, very stressful and a lot going on. But it's a tremendous opportunity also to focus a little bit what we're doing now and what's the idea behind everything, so that. Maybe we could take out a little bit of a chizuk from the actual Yom Tov of Pesach. So I heard many times from Matasyahu Zatzal, Mashgiach, so he used to always say many times that the whole idea that we have emunah, that Hashem is going to bring Mashiach eventually, the whole Mashiach coming, Vasid Lavai, and we're going to We draw the emunah from the whole year from Pesach. That's where we draw the emunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Mashiach. And as a matter of fact, you know, one of the questions that they ask when Mashiach comes is, "See, peace of Yeshua, did you wait for Mashiach to come?" So, you know, if you have a child in school, a lot of times they'll come home and they have a test and they said, "The teacher asked us questions, but she never taught it in class." So you ask me a question if you never taught it in class. It's like the most, that's like, you know. So where does it say in the Torah to see peace of Yeshua that you have to await Mashiach? It's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. It doesn't say it anywhere. No pasuk that says you have to wait for Mashiach. So you got to shmaim. Did you wait for Mashiach? I didn't know. No one told me. It didn't say it anywhere. How do you ask me a question on something that you never told me about? So where does it? That's not in the Chumash. It's the Rambam. Where does it say in the Chumash anything to do with Tzipis Yeshua? That's the question. So he said over from the Rishonim that the Rishonim says from Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzisicha Meret Mitzrayim. If I took you out of Mitzrayim, that means I have the ability to take you out of any galus, and you have to believe that. You have to believe if I took you out of Mitzrayim, I'm going to take you out of this galus too. So we draw on this Emunah of Pesach to take us through the year. So there's a very powerful mashal of the Nesivis. And again, there's a very powerful mashal. Because he asks a very interesting question. We start the whole Seder, we say, Halach ma'anya, Lashana, Hashata ha'cha. Right now we're here, Lashana, and we're Hashata avdi, now we're avadim. But next year we'll be free. Now we're in Galus, but next year we'll be free. So that's a pretty, like, bad introduction to the Seder. You're sitting down, what is, oh, it's this Manchir saying that we're finally free, and what's the first thing you say? We're really slaves still. So then what do you sell? So what's the whole Seder? You sit down, you finally got ready. Why? Because we got free, and then the first thing you say is, we're not free. We're still slaves. So then what's the point? So he says we're answering a very fundamental question. And it's this question. We are free, but are we any better off than we ever were? We're still in Galus. We're not better off than we ever were. So he says the following Gevaldik Moshel. Unfortunately, the Moshel has a little more meaning to it now, when you can understand what it means to be a captive. So it talks about that there was a person that was a captive, and he was taken captive as a child, and he didn't really know much of anything. He didn't know who really his parents were, and he forgot who they were. Eventually, a person comes out, and a person takes him out of captivity. And this person that takes him out of captivity created a gewaltig relationship with him. He took care of him, and he fed him, and he raised him, and paid for his college, and he really raised him. But he wasn't a perfect. He had his childhood. He was in captivity. He wasn't a perfect child, and he got into trouble again. And the person who took him out told him, "Look, I see you're getting into trouble. If you get into trouble, it's not going to be that great for you because." You know, but Lemaisa, if you get into jail again, I'm sure I'll figure out a way to get you out again also. And Lemaisa, that's what happened. Taka got into jail again. He got into jail again, and he was kind of sad that he was in jail again. And then, in the jail, he remembered that every year on the anniversary, when he was taken out of the captivity the first time, when he was in the home of his original, like, step parent, he made a party with him. They made a party every year on the anniversary that he took free. I took you out of captivity. You became my stepchild. We have this relationship. It's amazing. So he was thinking to himself, now I'm in jail. Should I make this anniversary? Should I celebrate this anniversary again? And he says to himself, well, of course I should, because he told me that when he took me out of captivity, he told me that we're good friends. I'm your stepfather. I'll take care of you. I raised you. And if you ever get put into jail again, don't worry, I'll take you out again. So I'm not so worried about being in jail now because he took me out that time. And he developed that relationship with me. So Mamela, I'm not so worried now either. So he celebrated it in the jail. So the Nesiva says that's the idea. The idea is Hashem took us out Mitzrayim. He didn't just take it out. He created a relationship with us. He took care of us. He nurtured us. He brought us into Eretz Yisrael. He gave us so much. And we deserve to go back into the Galus. But we remember that because of that original time that he took us out, we're not going to be here forever. He's going to take us out again. So the Amunah of the Yitzias Mitzrayim comes up again every year. And even though we're in the Galus, and that's the Agdama, you're right, we're in the Galus, but because he took us out of Mitzrayim, he's going to take us out of this time. So it's the Emunah of the, it's the Emunah that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim that will keep us going. There's a Balaturim. It's famous that we always call the Leil Pesach, Leil Seder, we'll call it Leil Shimurim. It's a Pasuk, Leil Shimurim. It's the night that we're guarded. What does Leil Shimurim mean? We're guarded, right? So people don't say Kriyat Shema, they don't lock their doors, different things. It's the night that we're guarded. But really, Shimurim doesn't mean guarded only. Shimurim is another word. It says by Yaakov Avinu, V'aviv Shomar Es Adavar, he anticipated for the dreams of Yosef to come true. It's a night of anticipation. It's the night that we anticipate the Geula. So the Balaturim says, it says, Leil Shimurim, it's a night of double anticipation. Two. What are the two? He says, it's the night that Hashem anticipated to take us out of Mitzrayim, and that we anticipate eventually that Hashem will take us out of this Galus. So the whole night we're building up this concept that Hashem is going to take us out, and this is the Emunah, I think, even stronger this year, that Hashem will take us out. But I want to bring up a point that is a little, it's not so often discussed, but it's a very powerful point about this issue, this inyan. The Vilna Goin says that if the same exact way that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim is how Hashem will take us out of this galus. The Mashiach is going to come in the same way. So says the Vilna Goin, you better be ready. Because what happened in Mitzrayim? 80% of Klal Yisrael didn't make it. Makas Choshech. She says, not everybody's going to make it. Not everyone's going to be Zaycha. Says this. That's what he says. He says, the same way that they left Mitzrayim, they're going to leave like this, and it's going to be specific people. So what do you have to do to make it? Because we all want to be from the ones that are chosen. So I don't think that's the common perception. No Jew will be left behind, this type of stuff. It's not true necessarily. Because not everyone's going to be chosen necessarily. So there's an amazing rush. The rush asks Akasha. He says, if 80% of Klal Yisrael didn't make it out of Mitzrayim, so how did Dasan and Avira make it out of Mitzrayim? Dasan and Avira were troublemakers. They start up with Moshe Rabbeinu. Every time in the Midbar, who was making trouble? Why is there man? Dasan and Avira. Moshe Rabbeinu, why are you doing this? Dasan and Avira. So they were like Rishoyim. So you're telling me 80% of Klal Yisrael was worse than them? So how'd they make it out? That's his kasha. So the Rosh says, because Dasan and Avira had one midah, they believed in the Mashiach. You didn't have to be a tzaddik. You had to be a waiting Mashiach. They believed that they were going to get out of Mitzrayim. And apparently the other ones didn't. So the midah that's required is to believe that it's going to happen. Now, L'chaira, in order to believe that it's going to happen, I think that we have to address a very basic point, which is we have to live our lives in a way that's consistent with the belief that it's going to, that Mashiach's going to come. So we can't just say, well, I believe it. When it comes, let me know what it's like. You have to live now that way. And this is a very big responsibility that we have to live our lives consistent in a manner of somebody that believes that we're not here forever. So let's take a very simple example. Okay? Someone has been waiting their whole life to get to go on a year tour of India. They want to go see Nepal and the mountains, and they've been like, this is like their dream, but they can't afford it. They can't afford it. And they're waiting for this phone call that like they won this free trip to Nepal and they're going to climb Mount Everest and see it, whatever. I don't know what there's to see there, but they're going to go on this whole major tour of the whole of India. And now, they put in money in raffles, and they told their friends, if anyone ever gets points, let me know, I want to go. Now, Lemaisa, he could get that call any second. So what does he do? So he knows that when you get to these types of places, you drink the water, you get sick. So he starts now drinking the water of that place so that when he gets there, he's not going to get sick when he drinks the water. And he starts learning the language and gets used to the food. And he starts like getting used to the culture of that place. Because he doesn't want the following scenario to happen. The guy calls him up and says, okay, I got you your ticket. When's it for? You can go now. He says, now? Hold on a second. But I'm not ready. Right? So he's been kind of accustoming himself to the culture of the place that he wants to go so that he's ready. Right? So the point is that our lives, we have to live consistent with that belief. And this is really what I want to just talk about a little bit. Because the big, big nisayan of our dar is a very big emphasis on having a lot of stuff, on having a lot of things, and what the things that we have are. There's a very big pressure to have the most, you know, in style this and the most up the a certain design of that, and every single thing is a lot of pressure out there to just keep up, basically. And we therefore end up not being very satisfied with what we have, because there's always going to be somebody that has something that we would like to have. We're never going to have everything. But there's one way that you could have everything, is if you realize that Hashem's giving you everything, that everything you have is what you need, everything you need is what you have, and you should, and to be happy, histapkus. And the Vilna Gaon says, histapkus means this midah. Histapkus means to be happy with what you have. The midah of histapkus, the Vilna Gaon says, comes from emuna. It's hainu hach. Emuna is histapkus. I was by Reb David Kohen, the Rosh Yeshiva in Chevron, and asked him this question, and he said, he told me this is what you should talk about. That histapkus is emuna, and he showed me in the Vilna Gaon where he says it. Histapkus is emuna. Now, that means that he has an unbelievable shyness here. When a person is very, there's nothing wrong with having nice stuff. I'm saying it's the idea of not being happy with what we have. Always needing what the other person has. Always looking over my shoulder and saying, oh, over there. And now we're gonna either go away to family, or family from other places are gonna come here. And everyone's gonna have different stuff. And everyone's gonna be looking and saying, oh, what stroller do they have? And what style shoes or this or whatever do they have? And our children think that way, and we think that way, and no one ends up being happy with what you have. And the problem with this midah of chemda, it's really jealousy, is the Vilna Gaon says in another place, he says that taiva is of physical desires. Taiva takes away your olam haba. But he says, but chemda, which is jealousy, takes away your olam hazeh also. You can't even enjoy what you have because you're so busy with what you don't have. So when you're so busy with what you don't have, then you don't end up being happy with what you do have. And therefore, this midah is how we think. We want to work on our emunah, we want to work on our emunah. It's very simple. The emunah, the first emunah is, we talk about Pesach, and emunah, the first emunah is Hashem takes care of me. Hashem takes care of me, He gave me exactly what I need. He was very special with me, He allowed me to have so many nice things, I should be happy with it. And when I'm happy with it, I can enjoy it, and guess what? Then Hashem gives you more, because He sees you're happy with it. But if you're not going to be happy with it anyway, you know that, you buy your kid something, and then they're like, this, you know, this is what you got me? Or whatever. So that's it. So then it doesn't make you happy for giving it, and it doesn't make them happy. So no one's happy. So then it doesn't motivate you to do it again. So this is the basic of emunah. The basic level of emunah is addressing this inyan. I have what I need, and I should be satisfied with it. When in the Reb Tzadok HaKohen, he says, and then the Vilna Gaon says it also, but he says, Aseres Yemei Tshuva is keneged the 10 days, the Aseres HaDibros. Aseres Yemei Tshuva, each day is keneged one of the Aseres HaDibros. So he says, according to that, Yom Kippur, the highest day of connection, what's that keneged? L'sachmud. Don't be jealous. I would think Yom Kippur should be against the highest level. Yom Anochi Hashem Elokecha, believe in Hashem, Shabbos, something special. No, Yom Kippur, the way you achieve Yom Kippur is, don't be jealous. Why? Very simple. Because the wanting, the needing, the overindulging in materialism takes away a person's connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't connect to this, if you have that, if you're into that. So the opposite of Yom Kippur is the Leil Sachmer. So Tzadik says. So we want ourselves to be able to connect, and we want our children to be able to connect. If we feed them this, always, you know, I'm not saying not to give and anything like that. I'm saying what the hergish is. What's the mentality behind it? We're so lucky that we have this. Enjoy it, and try to encourage them to be satisfied and be happy. And if someone, I need more. No, look how much. Focus on what we have. Don't focus on what we don't have. And the more that we're the Vilna Gaon says beferish. We want our children to enjoy Yiddishkeit. We want them to. That's the biggest hope that we could have. So the Vilna Gaon's lashon here. Wow, strong lashon. He says. First he says, "V'i efshe lahasig mesikus haTorah." Nobody can achieve a sweetness in Torah. Elayidei harchakus min hatayvus. In other words, a person has to separate themselves from these things. And this is found by everybody. Okay, so if we can, I think. This is like a huge nisayon for our generation. Why? Because Baruch Hashem, we experienced a tremendous ribui. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael a tremendous bracha, to have a lot of bracha. And Memela, things became very available. But for some reason, the things that we have, I don't even think Goyim could figure out how to create this stuff. Like, maybe once in a while you could go to a store that has some candy, but 14, like six aisles of different candies, and like it's just in every store, like there's seven stores like that. That so it's just the reboy and the reboy. And it's a very big nisayon. There's a very powerful maisa from Ramota Pargamansky. Ramota Pargamansky was a goyin from Tells, and he ended up in France after the war. And he was the Rav of the Covenant of the Ghetto. And after the war, it's like 1947, he gave a drasha. And what he said in the drasha was like nevuah, basically. It was nevuah and a dvar chachma. And he said that we should be very, very proud of Klal Yisrael. Very proud of Klal Yisrael. We were threatened to be killed, and we were threatened, our existence was threatened. And look, we survived. And the yeshivas are going to be rebuilt. And we're still here. And Hashem challenged us in the Nisayim of Mesiras Nefesh. Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. You have to love Hashem with all your heart. And that means ad Mesiras Nefesh. And Klal Yisrael was oymed bin Nisayim. Klal Yisrael survived the Nisayim. He survived the Nisayim. They were challenged, and we survived. He says, but that Kumenet Zeit is going to come a time in Klal Yisrael, not so long from now. And he said this when Klal Yisrael was desolate. They couldn't put bread on. There was refugees all over the place. And everyone was just coming. And he says, it's not going to be so long from now that Klal Yisrael is going to have an Nisayon of Uvachol Me'odecha. That there's going to be a different Nisayon for Klal Yisrael. And the Nisayon is, what are we going to do with the ribui that Hashem gives us? And he says, that Nisayon is going to be a hard Nisayon for us to pass. So in other words, we're in a whole, our generation is facing a whole different thing. How do we respond when Hashem gives us bracha? Are we satisfied with what we have? We enjoy what we have. We get the nice stuff and we enjoy it. That's fine. But we're not busy with what the other people have. We're not busy with what we don't have. We're satisfied with what we do have. And we're focused on what we do have. And we're happy with it. And this is a tremendous nisayon. And the reason I'm saying it is because there were so many stories this year, unfortunately, of from people that got involved in dishonest business and stuff like that. And the reason is Mishnah Berurah says Beferish, that the reason is because the people were not living according to their standard, and they needed more money than they could afford to live with, so they start stealing. In other words, a person is going to be satisfied with what they have; they're always going to have enough. Hashem gives enough. All of a sudden, you need a lot more. Where are you getting it from? It's a big nisayon. So, well, I heard from Rabbi Zimmerman, Rabbi Shagan Feivel Zimmerman, when he was here from England, said Gavalda Gavar. I'll end with this. But he says that we say in the davening on Yom Tov, Shabbos really also, it says, Katshenu b'mitzvoisecha. Hashem, you have mitzvahs. Give us the kedusha of the mitzvahs. V'sein chalkenu b'sarasecha, and allow us to have a portion. We all want a portion. We all want a portion. We all want our children to have a portion. We all want to be able to live a life of mitzvahs. But there's another thing. Sabeinu mituvecha. Let us be satisfied with the goodness that you give us. If we're satisfied with, are we happy when we achieve those things? Are we happy with that? If we can be happy with those things, then we'll be besimcha with everything else as well. So, as we enter into the Yom Tov of Pesach, we focus on that the Yom Tov of Pesach gives us the emunah to move forward. And it's challenging times. But we know Hashem didn't forget about us. And we're like that boy that was taken out, but he's happy that even though he's in jail, he's going to come out again. And that's how we should be. We should be happy that we celebrate Pesach knowing that there's going to be a geula. And it's Leil Shimurim because HaKadosh Baruch Hu anticipated that day. And the emunah for the geula comes from Pesach. And the Avodas HaLaila is to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take us out. But on the other hand, we have to live a life that's consistent with that emunah. Because the emunah is going to be what's going to... The emunah that we're going to experience that is going to be what's going to take us out. And the way to live a life that's consistent with that is live a life of realizing of emunah, histapkas, realizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us what we need, being happy with what we have, not getting into this whole nisayon when we're going to see, where, you know, it's a big challenge when with gathering together with a lot of people, and be satisfied with what we have. Get the chizuk to realize that Hashem gives us what we need, and that's that emunah that Hashem that's that emunah of living with Kadosh Baruch Hu. So when we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi, we open the door. Why do we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi? The Mishnah Berurah says because it's Leil Shimurim. We open the door by Shvach Hamascha LaGoyim. It's Leil Shimurim. What does that mean? The Mishnah Berurah says it's the simen. It's the schus of our emunah in the geula itself. We open the door and say, Eliyahu HaNavi's right here. We believe. We believe that he's here. So Mishnah Berurah says, the emunah itself, that we believe it, that will be the schus for it to come as well. So it should be zaycheh that we should strengthen our emunah, use the opportunity throughout the Yom Tov HaPesach to strengthen our emunah in the Mashiach, to strengthen our emunah in the Mashiach, but at the same time, living with emunah now, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu watches over us, and he takes care of our needs, and not to get caught up with all the things going on around us, so that we can focus on the bracha that Hashem gives us, and that emunah will catapult us to the emunah in the Mashiach coming, Bezer Hashem as well.